Hey everyone, this is Luke with Back to Birding. With the recent split of several species of birds native to the Lesser Antilles, including several former house wren species, it seemed fitting to upload this interview with David Holly from this past winter about his Lesser Antilles trip from summer of 2023, which he made in large part because of these wrens. Enjoy!
All right. Welcome back to the Back to Birding podcast. This is Patrick Higgins.
And this is Luke Thompson. And for the first time, we are going to do an interview. Today, we are joined by...
I'm David Holly. Happy to be here.
So David is a birder who's originally from around here. Where are you from? Like, it's Georgia.
I consider Georgia like my childhood home, but it was Ringgold, so it was just like right across the border.
That's not far at all.
Yeah, like I would literally ride my bike to Tennessee. It was 3 miles away.
Yeah,
I consider like Chattanooga as my home area, even though I kind of claim Georgia as my home state.
And so you've been birding for your entire life, pretty much, right?
Pretty much. I mean, at this point, it's 2/3 of my life. I started when I was 10, and I'm 30 now. Oh, I guess I'm 31. Wow. Yeah, I'm old. I'm
getting old, dude.
Yeah, I know. I'm like double your guys' age now.
Yeah.
I've got a brother older than you, so don't worry.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You're double my age, and I have a sister who's only 2 years older, so you just feel, I mean, basically the age of my parents, right?
Yeah. No.
but yeah, I met David a couple years ago. I guess the first time we met was on like a Hiawassee CBC or something.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So a couple years ago, I'd seen his lists and his name because he used to bird around our area before he went off to college and stuff, right? So
yeah, I definitely remember that now, because I remember meeting your dad, and I didn't put, because I knew your name, but I didn't put together that you were Luke. But I just remember talking to your dad at the platform, and we had a great day that day.
And I remember we like ran off to get like try for red-breasted or nuthatch, and we like sprinted like a half a mile.
Speaking of, have y'all had red-breasted nuthatch all winter?
No, not here. Not even back in Johnson City before I left. Normally they come down, but I hadn't.
I haven't heard anybody in Tennessee.
So where are you at in life right now, David?
That's an excellent question. So I am in medical school, just finished the second year, and I just took step one and I'm awaiting those results. So I don't know if I'm still in medical school at this point.
Well, good luck. Well, How did it feel?
Oh, like really, really bad, but it always does. Yeah. I'm like quite confident that I failed, but I usually feel like that and then I don't fail. So I don't know.
Well, maybe, good luck.
This is the one time that it's actually true though. I fail probably. I should know in a week or two.
Well, hopefully you pass.
Good luck there.
So the reason we brought David in today is, so he, this summer, you had a month off from med school.
Yeah.
And so you looked at this a month off and you decided, I'm going to do a birding trip. But tell us what trip you chose and why, because it's pretty unorthodox. Like normally someone who has a month off and it's like, I'm going to go birding, would choose somewhere in the tropics that's like high diversity, so somewhere like the Andes, like Ecuador, Peru, Colombia, something like that. Mm-hmm. But instead you chose the Lesser Antilles, so tell us about that.
Exactly. Okay, so I was sitting in class, so this may be serve to elaborate on why I'm feeling that I failed this step one exam. I was sitting in class, this is in probably February or March of this past year, looking at where to go. And I was just looking at different wrens, because wrens are my absolute favorite family in the world. And my life goal is to see all the wrens in the world. I was looking at wrens, and I was scrolling through house wren for some reason, and I came across the St. Lucia subspecies of the house wren, subspecies with big air quotes. And I was like, what the heck is this? And then I looked, and it was house wren. And it was, because I thought it had been mislabeled as a house wren, because there's no way that this thing is a house wren. And so I started looking, it's like, okay, this is St. Lucia, which is in the Lesser Antilles. And then I started looking, what other house wren subspecies are in the Lesser Antilles? Are there others other than St. Lucia? And I was looking, and turns out there are four, at least currently in existence, because there were historically some as well. And the Lesser Antilles, there's Dominican wren, there's St. Lucia wren, there's Grenada wren, and there is St. Vincent wren. And all of them are very different from each other as well. Like, not only are they very different from the house wrens that we have here on the mainland, but they're so completely different from each other.
Isn't that your picture, David?
That is my photo. Yeah,
it's yours.
Patrick just pulled up. Yeah, that's my photo. Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah. So when I saw the St. Lucia Arenas, like for those who haven't looked at one before, they have a bright white belly and they have a gigantic long thrasher bill. So it's nothing like our house wrens.
And what does a normal house wren look like for the?
Yeah, normal house. Like I guess we should clarify what normal means. Like, is normal would be like. What I consider normal is like an Eastern North American house wren, which is kind of like a drab brownish on the upper parts, same brownish on the under parts, but a little bit more gray in there. Medium long bill. Yeah. Some barring in the back and on the tail. And medium short bill, like relatively long and thin, but compared to like the subspecies on St. Lucia, it has a very short, short bill.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then I have the tendency to like, when I dive into a topic, I dive hard into it. Uh-huh. And so as I was looking, I was like, okay, there are four different subspecies, well, soon to be species eventually, of house wren in the Lesser Antilles.
Are you hinting at some of the researchers out there that we need to do that?
Exactly. Do that yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because it's just a matter of somebody.
So Patrick, that's you.
Yeah. I guarantee if these birds were found in mainland US, they would have been split decades ago. Mm. But because they're in just like these under-traveled areas, they just haven't gotten much attention. But so there are four of them on four different islands. And so, I mean, like I said, I dive deep into topics when I dive in. And I could have just been like, okay, I'll go to those four islands. But like, as I continued to look in the Lesser Antilles, more cool things started to pop up. Like, a lot of them have their own warbler species, which is the second best family on the planet. New world warblers. Yeah,
right.
I'm talking about Perulidae, the new world warblers. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have their own parrots. When you get far south, so as you're getting closer to South America, in Grenada and St. Vincent, they have their own tanager. Which is just like, when I learned that there's a Lesser Antillean tanager, I was like, mind blown. It's just really
I
cool.
didn't even, is it just a Lesser Antillean tanager that's kind of like the same on multiple islands, or are there multiple?
So they're on two islands. They're on St. Vincent and Grenada. Each has their own subspecies. They are visually distinct. Whether or not they will be split, I'm less confident on that compared to the wrens. But, I mean, honestly, for me personally, I don't care how we label them. The fact that they're, like, visually distinct and they're on these two separate islands that are really close to each other, it's just awesome. And it's just, I don't know, I absolutely love it. And so when I started uncovering all this stuff about the Lesser Antilles, I just decided to dive headfirst and go all out because I had the time. And this is probably the last time for a while that I'll have a significant chunk of time. And so I decided to go to all 10 of the islands that have birds on them in the Lesser Antilles. There are other Lesser Antillean islands that are more like, I don't know, a lot flatter, have no trees. They're basically beach tourist islands that don't really have special birds.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Decided to go to 10.
Yeah.
Went to 9.
Exactly.
I'm sure we'll get into the chaos.
Yeah, because of the chaos.
This was this summer, right?
That was, summer 2023. Yeah.
So I guess we'll just go chronologically. Like, where did you start? Like, what was...
Yeah, so when planning this trip, I don't know if you guys want to get into logistics of it, because it can be a little bit complicated.
I mean, as long... we can cut it out if it's boring.
Okay.
I love to dive into this.
Cool.
I'm sure Luke, more than anybody, wants to hear about this, because he probably needs a lot of tips and tricks for...
Yeah, I need this because I'm about to leave.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that somebody will be inspired to go, because these islands just need more attention from birders, for sure.
And also, like, before we dive into this whole thing, David has a immaculate trip report, like, with all the logistics and stuff, 25 pages. So if you want to, like, if you're inspired after hearing this and you're like, I want to go to the Lesser Antilles and see some of these birds, we'll link it in the description. It's got everything you would need to know, especially if you're traveling on a budget. It's very, very helpful. I read the whole thing. I thoroughly enjoyed it because I like hearing about trips and trip planning. But yeah, so if anyone is inspired to go to the Lesser Antilles, we'll have that linked.
Cool. Yeah. So for me, as I was diving into planning this trip, I started to recognize, as far as getting between the islands, that you could group them into two different categories. The one category being islands that are connected by ferries, and the other category being islands that you have to take flights to get between.
Supposedly connected, right?
Yes. In theory, eventually connected by flights. Whether or not it's when you're scheduled to go, who knows? But the four islands that are connected by ferry are, from north to south, it's Guadeloupe, Dominica, Martinique, and St. Lucia. Those four are connected by ferry, and then all the other islands are connected by plane, which means that there's two islands up north, three, Antigua and Barbuda, which is, they're the same country, but then Montserrat as well, which are north of Guadeloupe, those are not connected by ferry, at least as of right now. Mm-hmm. And so that you basically, no matter what, you can't, it's going to be really difficult to do it in a perfect north to south or south to north order. So you kind of have to mix things up. So, but the, basically, if you want to do it as cheaply and efficiently as possible, do the four ferry islands together and then do the rest of the islands that are connected by flight. You can either do the flight first and then the ferry islands or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I personally just was searching, it took me months, just searching to find the cheapest flight in from the U.S. to the Lesser Antilles and then flight out. And for me, it ended up being that going into Martinique from the U.S. and then out of Antigua back to the U.S. was the cheapest way to do it. I got really, really good one-way deals on that. And so I flew into Martinique first. That was my first island that I hit. And I spent 3 days there. It was probably a little bit overkill, but I didn't want to miss anything. And it turns out it was good that I had 3 days because it was raining the entire time I was there. I think it was just bad timing. I was also there during the rainy season. Mm-hmm. Martinique only has one true endemic.
What is that?
It's the Martinique oriole, which is a high quality bird.
It's describe it for it. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So when we think of orioles here in the East, I typically think of like orange, which is true. Martinique orioles are orange, but it's a different type of orange. So take orchard oriole, but make it more, I don't even know how to, the color was so unique. I was shocked because the photos don't show how unique this color is. It's take the orange of an orchard oriole, turn it a little bit brighter orange than that, but then also add some like purplish maroon hues.
Oh, that's
it's
weird.
It's really, really cool. None of the photos that, like my photo is garbage because it was raining. All the photos that I found online, which are not very many, don't really show the true like color of this bird when you actually lay eyes on it.
Can you get like vibes of the color by the photos?
Yes, you can. Some of the photos that I found, I think there have been one or two more since I've been that show it a little bit more like I actually experienced it in the field. But it's like a burnt, crispy orange maroon color. That's
is
just
there
really
anything
pretty.
Else in the world you could compare it to?
That's a tough challenge. I'm sure that there is another bird that has something like that. It's not coming to my mind immediately. Yeah, I don't know. If I think of something, I'll circle back to that.
Is the Martinique parrot not endemic?
It is extinct.
It's extinct.
Yeah.
Hey. There's going to be a lot of, I think that's a trend with all of these islands,
absolutely
right?
Absolutely is a trend, and it's a very sad thing. Mm-hmm. As I was doing the research for this, I came across a lot of things because there used to also be a Martinique subspecies, well, Martinique house wren as well. Mm-hmm. And I think Guadeloupe also had a subspecies of house wren that was last reported in like the 70s or something.
And is it human activity pretty much causing the extinctions?
Human activity, yeah, and human-related things like cats, rats, those types of things have caused a lot of issues down there.
Especially if you have such small population sizes.
Yep, because these islands are tiny, like really tiny.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the general size of the islands for people who don't know.
Yeah, so I'm assuming that most of the people listening are U.S.-based or at least familiar with U.S. stuff. Yeah, so Guadeloupe, of the 10 islands that I went to, Guadeloupe is the biggest. And it is still, Rhode Island is 2.5 times bigger than Guadeloupe. And that's the biggest of the islands. Yeah, and Rhode Island is infamously tiny. Like yeah, you can drive across it in like an hour. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous how small these islands are.
So I looked it up, and I think Guadeloupe is roughly equivalent to the size of Hamilton County.
Okay, cool.
Which is the county that we're in right now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and that was the biggest of the islands. And Guadeloupe also didn't require much travel because basically all the birds can be seen in one national park. But yeah, Guadeloupe comes a little bit later. Martinique, I think the other thing I want to note about Martinique is the white-breasted thrasher, which could be a split. I don't know. I don't really care because it's found on two islands, Martinique and St. Lucia. And the two different subspecies on those, or one for each island, are quite different. I didn't recognize how different they were just by looking on eBird, but when I actually got there and saw them and laid eyes on them, they're very, very different visually.
So what is a white-breasted thrasher like? So let's dive into this
white-breasted thrasher. They behave pretty much like you would expect a thrasher to behave. Kind of skulky a little bit, pretty much on the ground. They also, the St. Lucia ones, at least in my brief experience with them, spend a lot of time in the trees, which I never, like high up, like, you know, 20 feet up. which I never saw the Martinique birds doing that. I don't know if that was just a coincidence.
And these are thrashers that are closely related to like our brown thrasher here.
I don't know taxonomically how closely related they are. They're definitely in the same family. They're mimics.
I just pulled it up and it looks just like a cuckoo.
Yeah, I mean, just like a black-billed cuckoo. It's not too far off. It does have a little bit of cuckoo vibes.
That's really funny.
Because they are very clean white down below, and very, very dark above. And that was the thing that struck me about the St. Lucia versus the Martinique birds. The Martinique birds were very gray and brown above, whereas the St. Lucia birds were like, it was like black and white. It was like tuxedo looking versus, I never got that vibe from the Martinique birds.
Okay.
And Martinique birds, the national park there that you can see them at, it's French, so I'll probably butcher it. I think it's La Caravelle.
The French are going to come for you, David.
Yeah, I know. I felt really bad when I was in Martinique. Oh, yeah, that's another distinction of the island. So Martinique and Guadeloupe are both French territories. Mm-hmm. So French is the national language. Euros are the currency. They drive on the right or correct side of the road, whereas the other islands drive on the wrong side of the road. For us Americans, the left side of the road. So that's something you have to get used to as well.
I'm sure.
Yeah, but the La Caravelle had white-breasted thrashers in like the mangroves, whereas in St. Lucia it was different habitat for sure. I don't know if there's just lack of availability and they just happened to filter into a different habitat on the two different islands, but they were very different, and I think it's a possibility for a split. Whether or not they get split, I don't care, like I said, because to me, if you can actually like notice differences like that, it feels like a different experience.
Was the behavior between those two potential subspecies any different, or were they kind of occupying the same niche in a way?
So I don't think that I personally can speak on that, given how limited my experience is with them. From my observations, yes, really? Very different. The white-breasted thrashers on Martinique were very chill, very easy to see. They would literally just be right by the trail, scratching up leaves. Whereas on St. Lucia, I really had to chase the things down, and they stayed high up. They acted the same in that they were like very scoldy. Like they would get in these like small little groups of two or three and just make this harsh, raspy, scoldy sounds, almost catbird-like in a way.
Yeah.
So but you know, that could have just been the day that I was there. I spent multiple days with the Martinique birds, but only one with the St. Lucia birds. So that, I don't know. I don't know if that was just coincidence or if that was actually like indicative of what they are in general.
And you started out with the Martinique birds, right?
That's, yeah.
Martinique was your first island. So what was like, did you go to a specific spot for the thrashers or?
Yeah. So La Caravelle National Park is pretty much the only place in Martinique that they're left. Mm-hmm. And if you look it up on a map, it's a peninsula that sticks off the eastern side of Martinique. This it seems very perilous. Like it's just one hurricane away from being destroyed. Because it's just such a tiny little peninsula sticking off. And that's pretty much the only habitat that's left on Martinique for the thrasher.
Yeah, I'm looking at it on the map. That's small.
Yep. Yeah, because you already have a small island, and then there's a small peninsula on the small island.
Wow. Yeah. That's treacherous.
Yeah.
And then, like, I mean, you imagine those population sizes are also really small, too. Yeah. So a genetic bottleneck, I'm sure, is...
Yeah. For sure. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, so nothing else really on the island is suitable for them?
Not that I'm aware. So based on eBird, no. Based on everything that I saw, no. Because on the like main part of the island, off the peninsula, there's no mangroves anywhere. And that's what these that's the habitat that these thrashers were using, was the mangroves near the coast.
I mean, I'm seeing some historical records all around
the
island. And like some 2023 records from like surrounding the island, but it's very low density.
Right.
And who knows if these were correctly identified birds too.
Yeah, I don't think there's much to confuse them with. But... I just know that the density of the birds, like the go-to place is there because around the rest of the island, it's much more hit or miss.
Yeah, for sure. Man, that's not good for that
species. Yeah, I know that's honestly the feeling that I had for pretty much all of these islands that I went to, is how limited, because the islands are already small to start with. And so when you have like an even smaller proportion of those islands set aside for national parks and for preservation, it's just, it's I don't know, depressing is probably not the right word, but it's sobering, maybe it would be a better word, that it's just like, wow, these species are hanging on by a thread, not because necessarily that and their current existence is problematic, but because they're just one storm away, just because of the region of the planet that these birds are on, that they're prone, this region is prone to hard-hitting hurricanes.
Especially with climate change is causing hurricanes to be even more hard-hitting.
I mean, we already saw that with 2019 with the Bahama Nuthatch.
And that wiped it out.
Because I think 2017, I think it's Hurricane Matthew. Don't quote me on that. That one I'm not sure. But 2017, a hurricane hit Grand Bahama, which is the only island that the Nuthatches were on. They thought they were gone. Sent out some teams, and they were excited to find some Nuthatches out there still in existence. And so everybody's celebrating. And then 2019, Hurricane Dorian hits in August/September. And they've sent multiple teams out, and it's been, what, 5 years now, 4.5 years, and nobody's found the Nuthatch, so it's pretty much certain that they're gone. The Bahama Warbler is gone from that island. They're only left on the other half of the island. Bahamas are much further north, which means the hurricane has had a lot more time to gain energy, so the Bahamas are much more prone to hard hurricanes than, say, like Grenada, which is one of the furthest south Lesser Antilles. They tend to not get as bad as far as the weather goes, but again, with the higher frequency of hard hitting hurricanes throughout the region, like it's sobering to think about the existence of these birds on these islands. Because I know St. Lucia was hit a few years ago, everybody was terrified. They got hit really badly. It didn't make the news, but I don't know why we don't hear about those islands as much as we hear about like Cuba or the Bahamas or Puerto Rico. I guess because we're not as close to them. But then some of them have volcanoes. Like St. Vincent had a big a volcano eruption a couple years ago that was blacking out the sky for a few days and left inches of ash around. So these birds, like, they're facing a lot of threats that we just don't really think about here. That was another aspect of the trip. So just beyond the birds, just like being there and thinking about like through the millennia that what the wildlife here have experienced.
Pretty resilient species.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I mean, yeah, man, I'm just thinking like genetically, like you frequently, I'm sure most of the population gets wiped out because of something. And then, I mean, it's kind of crazy like that they survive some sort of, I'm sure there's a lot of genetic bottlenecks that happen through time for these species, these organisms. So, you know,
for sure. There's a little bit survivorship bias because we're like, oh yeah, they survived. But also there's a bunch that haven't survived
that
we may not think about as much. Some of that we do know exists because it's like there's records of them like the 1800s or early 1900s.
Yeah.
But then I'm sure there's probably dozens of species of birds that throughout the past, you know, tens of thousands of years were there, but we didn't know that they were there because a lot of times if they're small birds, like first of all, fossils are pretty rare to start with, but then if you have like a small bird, the chance of finding that fossilized small bird is minuscule. So there may not be there, even if there are fossil records of, you know, crazy, maybe St. Vincent had its own warbler that was similar to like the St. Lucia warbler, and then we just never knew because maybe it went extinct 20,000 years ago when a volcano erupted or something.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you look at like some of these islands. It seems like some of them have like their own warbler and stuff, or like it's interesting that only a couple have like their own of one thing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of them that have their own of like three or more things. And I wonder if it's something like you were saying in the past, they would have had all of those, but over time.
Yeah. It seems very likely. Like it seems improbable that as these islands were getting separated way back in the past, that only certain ones got, okay, you get a warbler, but then we'll skip that island. And then that one will get a warbler and then we'll skip that island. And like, it seems unlikely that was the case. Almost certainly, like there was like probably a founding warbler. Because when you look at like the St. Lucia warbler, it was considered one species until like 20 years ago or something. Puerto Rico, Barbuda, and St. Lucia now. They all have the one. It's similar to like a Grace's warbler, that type of vibe. Those are now Adelaide's warbler in Puerto Rico, St. Lucia warbler in St. Lucia, and then what was the other one? Barbuda warbler in Barbuda. Yeah. My assumption, and I'm doing this purely on speculation. I haven't looked at anything.
Purely off vibes.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Purely
that's
off vibes.
That's how you got to function in life.
All of the islands had this founding population of a Barbuda, Adelaide's, St. Lucia warbler
thing.
Yeah, like common ancestor to that. Yeah. And then over the past millennia, they've gotten filtered out. They've speciated the three that are still in existence have speciated. There's probably some speciation going on the other islands, and they're probably just not there anymore. That's pure speculation. I don't know if there's anybody has any fossil evidence of that. Yeah. Probably not, because it's a small songbird. But
We can see if we can add vibes to the scientific method.
Well, yeah. I think we should. I'll talk to Ben about that later today.
Yeah.
I'll shoot him a text.
Honestly, that's where hypotheses come from, is vibes. Yeah, vibes. It seems like that would be the case. And see, like, if I had unlimited time and unlimited funding, then, like, yeah, let's get a team. Let's go try to, like, dig up some stuff. But it seems like it'd be literally digging for a needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, I'm looking through here. These species look remarkably similar to Graces warbler. Has there been any genetic work to show that they are closely related to Graces? Or
I am unsure on that. Like, I when it comes to taxonomy, I vibe stuff, but I don't actually read all that many papers. Medical school kind of does that to you, where you kind of pick and choose what you read when it comes to heavy papers.
For sure. Yeah. Because that would be an interesting, like, if that is the case, like, what was the diversification that happened there? Because they're not very close to each other.
Right.
You know?
I could honestly also picture them coming from, like, a yellow-throated Bahama line. Because, like, the Bahama warbler kind of has a similar vibe as well.
I mean, to me, the Bahama warbler, I'm looking at that right now, looks like a yellow-throated warbler that's got more yellow on its belly and a massive bill.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, I'm not sure when these things diverge from each other. I don't know if it happened a long time ago or if it happened more recently.
None of us know.
None of us know.
Nobody knows.
Oh, I'm sure somebody does. I'm sure somebody has done. Because when they split out the Adelaides and the St. Lucia and the Barbuda warbler.
They had to do genetic work.
Yeah, I'm sure that they did. They did a phylogeny on that.
And surely, I mean, there's got to be Graces warbler genetics. Anyways, this is a tangent upon a tangent this upon is like a tangent.
Three layers of tangents. But you told me to go on tangents. So.
This is how the podcast goes. But yeah, we're one island end of nine, so...
Yeah, before we wrap up Martinique, I do want to mention Whitetail Nightjar, which is also at the same national park.
So, yeah, I've been studying up for my Panama trip.
Yeah.
And that's... Whitetail Nightjar is a species that is Central American and South American, right?
Yeah, and it's on no other Lesser Antillean island.
What is the story there?
I have no idea. My assumption is this, what we've been speculating about. Like, it probably was on all of the Lesser Antilles, and it's just been chipped off one by one by one pre-records. And so now we just have them left on Martinique.
And so is it like different?
So I don't know. Cause I actually, that was a lifer for me. I had not seen them in Central or South America. I will say this, when I was listening to them, so there were zero recordings of the Martinique birds. So all I had to go off of was recordings from Central and South America. And I was like, okay, surely they're going to be fairly similar. I get out to the stakeout spot. Cause there's like one male that displays in this national park. I'm sure there are more, but one is by
road. Is it something that you were guided to, or was it?
No, so I didn't have any guides there. It was somebody, I had contacted somebody and said, hey, I saw your reports there. Where did you go? And they gave me verbal directions, and I was able to find it fairly easily. And now, actually, on my trip report, there's a GPS pin.
Sweet.
And so I get down there, and this is one thing about the Lesser Antilles is frogs galore. Like, just constantly you're bombarded with frog calls.
I wonder how unique the frogs and the
herp stuff. Oh my goodness. I'm sure there's some herp people listening to this, like, going crazy. Like, why wasn't I paying attention to the herps?
So I've been dipping my toes in the herp stuff and I'm like,
your whole foot is in the herp stuff.
So I haven't done anything with frogs yet. I'm mainly salamanders right now. I'm sure there's some pretty crazy stuff.
I'm pretty sure that the endemism of herps is pretty similar to the endemism of birds, maybe even more on these islands. So I know I was missing so much, and probably 10 years down the road when I'm like way more into herps, I'm gonna kick it myself.
It's gonna be a natural, like, it's the natural progression of a birder, because birding is pretty much the easiest of this group to get into, right? So it's gonna be like birds, and then you reach some sort of cap where it's like, okay, now I've seen a lot of the easy birds, time to find something else. I don't know.
Or while you're birding, you find a snake or a salamander, and you're like, man,
cool too. Or you have a Ben Holt in your life who's just like really into salamanders, and then it carries over.
Well, actually, speaking of that, I should have said this, but I had an interview today at the aquarium for a forestry position that will be doing some husbandry of amphibians and reptiles, mainly turtles, but... kind of everything that they have going on there. So
how did it go?
Really well. I'm super stoked.
Do you think you're gonna get the job?
I hope so. And I shouldn't, you know, put too much forward on that, but I think so. Yeah. So
nice.
That'll be really exciting, and I hope I can learn some more about your amphibians through that.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I do a lot of herp stuff here, but for some reason when I go international, there's so much to do bird wise that I feel like my attention span can only like
100%.
Handle. If I come across like lizards and snakes, I absolutely will take pictures of them and ogle over them, but like I'm not as intense about that as
any other birds. And I mean, honestly, that makes sense. It's something where I think like I'm going to be spending, you know, a couple months in Panama where I'll be able to get a handle on the birds, and then I'll be into the perps there.
Yep.
Like it's like something where you need a lot of time.
I don't remember which island, but in your trip report, you mentioned Fertile Lance.
Ah, yes. That was White-breasted Thrasher spot in St. Lucia. Glad I didn't die. Because I had no idea they had Fertile. I think when I think Fertile Lance, I think Central and South America.
Yeah.
They're not on any of the other islands, as far as I'm aware. They're only on St. Lucia, from what I remember.
I wonder what the story is there.
I know is that tangent on St. Lucia, when we went, we did use a guide there in the evening because the nightjar there is semi-private property, so you had to use a guide. But I was telling him about the white-breasted thrasher that I had already seen that, and he was like, oh, like, did you see a Fertile Lance? I'm like, Fertile Lance? He's like, yeah, you didn't go off trail, did you? I'm like, no. And he's like, yeah, dude, like, they're literally on the trail. I see them probably 20 to 30% of the time I go there, and you have to watch your step. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, in a way, in hindsight, I'm glad I didn't know, but because I didn't get bit. Obviously, if I had run into one, I was like, okay, I should have known. But yeah, no, I was going, I was chasing the thrashers.
Did you go off trail?
Yes, because I heard them.
So yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's like semi-open. Like I didn't feel like I was destroying anything.
I mean, that's what I do locally is like if I hear a bird and there's not like a concrete wall in between me and the bird, I'm going to go off trail.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I operate.
Yeah.
Like, even if there's like knee deep water or mud.
That could have ended my trip right there.
And for those that don't know, Fertile Lance is a species of snake that is what the most venomous in Central America, South America, or is it second behind something? But it's definitely one of the most venomous in the world.
Yeah, nasty, nasty bites.
Yeah,
I would have loved to see one. I would not have loved to have been bit by one, but I would have loved to see one.
There's definitely Fertile Lance where I'm going in Panama because there's pictures on the that people have gotten of them. So on the river that's like outside the dude's house, so you know, gotta watch my step and pray to see one.
See one, appreciate them, respect them, but let's hope that you don't get too close.
Where were we before
we then? Were talking about frogs, because the cacophony of frogs,
a tangent on a white-tailed nightjar.
Yes, exactly. So everywhere you go day and night, there's always frogs calling. But especially like at dusk and dawn, like they really go crazy. Mm-hmm. And so this is dusk when the nightjar is getting ready to start calling, and I'm listening because I've listened to the whitetail nightjars on Merlin and on eBird and stuff. And like I said, they're all Central South American recordings. There's no recordings from Martinique. And I'm like, I don't hear anything. And then all of a sudden out of the cacophony of frogs, like I heard a different sound. I'm like, oh, that kind of sounds like a black Phoebe. and I was like, there's no way that's a nightjar, right? And like, cause I listened to it again. I pulled up my phone, listened to it. I was like, yeah, that's not the nightjar. Now all of a sudden I see something, it moved, like something flew down, and then I heard the call calling coming from there, a different location. I'm like, okay, a frog is not going to go 50 meters in like 2 seconds to start calling in a different location. So either there are two of these weird frogs or that is the nightjar. And turns out it was the nightjar. I started walking down there, got closer, and the bird is just sitting on the ground. And it's
a
nightjar.
Did you get audio of it?
Yeah, I got audio of it.
Okay, I'm gonna take a listen to.
Yeah, to me it sounds like a black Phoebe call. That's not my recording.
No, I know.
Okay, yeah, long drawn out, like a long drawn out whistle. Yeah, no, listen to the Martinique. All right,
it's not even a subspecies on eBird.
No, it's not.
That's wild.
So I don't know if it's just a local dialect thing, or if they're like so completely disconnected from the mainland population for so long that they've kind of diverged and done their own thing, but I really don't know. That.
Yeah, what?
It sounds like a black Phoebe to me.
That's so different.
Yeah, it's like beep, 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 beep.
That's wild.
Yeah. Hmm. So like I said, I didn't recognize it at first because it's like, that was not what I was listening for.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that, man, if somebody did some research on that, like there's something there, maybe. Like it could just be dialect, but I don't know.
Yeah, because I don't know what the case is for nightjars, but with songbirds, a lot of the songs are learned, so that means that, you know, you get local dialects of birds pretty easily, right?
Yeah.
You know?
But I'm pretty sure that that doesn't apply to, what is it, ossines and subossines? Is that what the term is? I forget. Man, it's been too many years since I've been into that level of detail with ornithology. But
yeah,
pretty sure that nightjars are in the group of birds where it's not learned.
Okay,
but I could be wrong on that. Don't quote me on that. I'm sure there's some biologist out there that's going crazy saying that that's wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's
someone's they're listening to this while they're driving, they're about to like swerve off the road in anger, you know.
Yeah, but either way, I think it's something that's super interesting that nobody talks about Martinique. And to be fair, like, there aren't that many unique birds there, but what birds are there are so cool, and like, I feel like there's so much unknown about the populations of birds in the Lesser Antilles.
That makes it so exciting to bird there.
I don't know why there's not people going down there.
I mean, I guess we do see it as like a general trend in the less traveled areas and less accessible areas. You have proportionately less research done on these species, especially the endemics. I mean, I know you even get a lot of that in a well-traveled place like Panama, but it's just hard to access a lot of the, you know, difficult areas. So then you have all these species that just we don't know anything about.
Yeah, for sure. Like, there, where I'm at in Panama, there is a historical record of a species called a glow-throated hummingbird.
Yeah.
And so, but there's no records in eBird in those mountains. But there's, like, the mountain hasn't been touched. It hasn't been deforested. So, like, there's got to be a, like, I don't see why there wouldn't still be glow-throated hummingbird up there unless it was a misidentification of a, like, a another species, which there's another species in that mountain range, Scintillant, which has no records for that area, but also looks really similar to glow-throated, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things where this place, this area of Panama isn't birded that much, and not, like, there's, like, a couple set hot spots where people go, but there isn't much exploration, at least via eBird. That's what it looks like. So who knows, like, what's going on there, you know?
Yeah, that's I know, honestly, for me, that's what makes birding and anything naturalist adjacent is just so exciting, because it's just, there's so much that's unknown, there's so much still to be discovered, because we think, oh, it's 2024, they've kind of discovered everything. No, that's absolutely not even close to the case.
It's pretty amazing and exciting to know that there's stuff out there.
And that's what I felt when I was with this white-tailed nightjar, because when I heard it, it's like, oh my goodness, this is nothing like what is on eBird in Macaulay Library. And so I immediately started recording the thing.
Cause it's the first recording out there of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you checked Xenocanto?
Yes, I checked Xenocanto as well, while I was out in the field, because I was like, something is wrong here. I pulled up Xenocanto, looked, and there's no recordings in Martinique either.
Yeah.
At the time, at least in June of 2023.
Did you get any pictures of it?
Yeah, I got horribly grainy pictures, but yeah, I did get photos of it. There's probably, I don't know, 15 photos on eBird from Martinique, much better than mine, because they found a nest a year or two ago.
So does it look similar to the?
Yes, but all nightjars look the same anyway. Lump them all. I'm joking.
That's where you got to go with it.
No, you sound like Luke.
I feel like I'm
only like that with gulls. Come on.
No, I feel like with nightjars, when there's like that heavy, heavy selection for that camouflage look, they all kind of like converge on a very similar vibe anyway.
Yeah, 100%.
I think unless there's something pretty extreme with the difference between the two, like especially since, even if they are, if there's enough divergence that they're separate species, they're still going to be very, very similar to each other because they're so closely related.
And especially with nightjars where they all look the same.
I feel like it'd be measurements. Like it would have to be in hand stuff.
Yeah, someone would like measure the primaries and
bill size.
P8 is this much longer.
right.
Yeah.
Except it wouldn't be a hard measurement. It would be like, the vibe of the is a little different.
Yeah. If you look at it, it looks like
if you turn your head to the right 45 degrees, the beige is a little different.
And
consistently different, though.
Consistently, objectively, though, different.
Could get objective, but like that's what I'm talking about with hypotheses are often driven by vibes. It's like you look at it, it's like that color looks slightly different to me,
right?
And then you could actually make that objective by like measuring the light frequencies being reflected back.
Yeah.
And like, then you could actually make it objective, but it came from a vibe.
That's true. Yeah, that's what you see on these like advanced identification pages and stuff, like especially with some of the gulls.
Yep.
It's like the primary projection is less black or more gray. It's right. Like, it's just, you can't measure that, I guess, easily. So,
and especially when you get into hybrids with gulls, you get a lot of vibes going
so,
on.
So yeah. How many species of gulls do you think are out there in the genus Loris? All right, let's piss some people off here, David.
Oh, okay. You want me to actually? Okay. I don't know. There's probably, it goes back to the conversation, what is a species? And yeah, the big fat, I don't know. For me with gulls, there's so much hybridization going on, but I don't necessarily buy completely into like the biological species concept where it's like, oh, if they're interbreeding, therefore they're not the same species. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think it's probably a combination of like a dozen different species concepts. I don't know. For me personally, I could get down with like maybe 8 or 9 gull species.
How many are there now? Like,
I don't know.
Hundreds.
Yeah, there's a lot. 70 probably. Maybe more than that. I haven't looked in a while.
So you're like, not even loris gulls. You're thinking like all gulls, we can push it down to 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do the other gulls hybridize a lot, or like?
What other gulls?
Like the small gulls, like the black-headed gulls.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, what is a species? I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Lump black-headed and lump that in with bony and laughing and all those gulls. No, I don't actually legitimately think that. But going back to vibes, like vibe-wise, there's like 8 or 9 general gull vibes to me.
This is my favorite gull vibe.
Pacific? Is that what that is?
I think it's
Pacific gull, right?
Pacific.
Yeah. That's its own species.
Pacific gull. So this
that's one of the 9.
This is remaining unchanged. So this thing has like a... Here, Patrick, have you seen
giant honking bill. I mean, part of it, too, is that the Pacific gull doesn't really overlap with other honking gulls. It overlaps with silver gull, which is one of, like, I would lump that in with, like, black.
Have you seen Pacific gull in the field in Australia?
Yeah.
Whoa. How did we get to Australia?
And I thought Western gull had a big bill, but that guy...
Oh, no. Pacific is king of that.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I wonder what...
I don't share the opinion of very little numbers of species. I feel like... whenever you do like mix all of these different concepts of speciation, like we're doing our best to figure it out. It's, I don't know. I feel like if we go purely on biological, then like, yeah, obviously we do have like, everything.
There's like 3 species of birds if you go on biological.
Yeah, exactly. But I just feel like we can't really do that consistently when we're trying to seek this very vague answer. But
listen, all I'm saying, gulls are stupid and they all breed with each other.
That makes it smart.
Shut up.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go, right.
Genetic variation.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, gulls all breed with each other, and I feel like it's oversplit. Like
it could be. And if we have any...
What is a herring gull?
Yeah, that's...
A herring gull is every other gull. That's the only exception. A herring gull, oh my gosh. Almost every single, like... hybrid that has its own name has herring as one of the 2 species.
It's true.
It's ridiculous.
They get around for sure.
Yeah, like what's the deal with that? And aren't there herring gulls like everywhere? Herring.
There are, but not in the Lesser Antilles. If we want to get back on.
What kind of like seabird and.
Yeah, so,
like,
okay.
Gull life, what was it?
I do feel like we've wrapped up Martinique. I don't think we're getting to all 9 islands. But,
But
I've comfortably talked about what I wanted to talk about Martinique because there's obviously I could talk all day about Martinique alone, but seabirds go because Martinique is one of the ferry islands. So the next island I went to was Dominica, so I took a ferry from Martinique to Dominica. It's like a 2-hour ride. Seabirds are relatively limited, although I was there in June, which probably is not the best time for seabirds. I did see like brown, red-footed boobies, great shearwater, cory shearwaters, white-tailed tropic birds.
Which corys?
Not Scopoles. I looked for. I don't know what I'm calling them. Scopoles. I don't like using that. I don't like using names for birds like that. But
yeah,
I don't know what other name is out there for them. But I don't even know if that's how you say that word. But
yeah, I don't know.
I specifically checked for them because I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. But
it's gonna be a split, right? I think
dropped a few days ago. That's a proposal at least. It's been trying to be split for a while. But it'd be great because then we could get corys and Scopoles or Scopoles, however you say it.
Scops.
Both renamed at once. There are basically no gulls. I think there are laughing gulls there during the summer. I'm sure during the winter they get stuff like lesser black-backed. Some random goals get around the world, like the crazy vagrants. But they're, goals and turns just in general, basically, this is kind of true of the Caribbean as a whole, though, that typically, like, when I think of, like, coastal, like, Florida, like, the Gulf Coast, even the Atlantic Coast, I think, definitely the Atlantic Coast, I think, like, tons of gulls, tons of terns. Like, you can get, like, large flocks of thousands and thousands of terns and gulls when you're on, like, the Atlantic or Gulf Coast. But once you get in the Caribbean, it's, like, it's dead.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be to the colleges about that.
Yeah, it seems like it'd be a really easy chain for them to go down to.
Yeah, like, South, I know, America. Roseates will breed down there, roseate terns.
Was there not, like, populations of, like, noddies and sooty terns?
Yeah, there are. But it's, in which, noddies, sooty terns. Yeah, I did see sooty and bridled from the fairies. But again, like, just scattered. There's not any, like, large groupings of these birds that will form feeding flocks or anything like that, at least that I witnessed during the summer. And it could just be a summer thing. But I've also been in the Caribbean in the winter, and that's just a general lack of gulls. Like, you're doing well to get, like, two or three species in a day.
How many species did you end up with?
For the entire trip?
Mm-hmm.
Of gulls or birds?
Gulls.
Gulls? I'd have to look at that. I think one.
What about birds just in general?
Birds? It's been a while since I looked at it. What was my total?
So your total, if we're not including any of the obvious splits that are in the future, 111.
Yeah, exactly. I knew it was just over 100.
Which is wild because I've had a day here with more species than that.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You could literally go spend 30 minutes in Ecuador or Colombia or Venezuela, one of those high diversity plate, 30 minutes and easily kick that. Like, that's the thing. Like, this trip is about the quality of birds. I'm not saying that the 112 species that you get in half an hour in Ecuador are not quality birds. There are tons of amazing quality birds there. But, like, for me personally, and this just has to do with everybody's, you know, personal wants and desires when it comes to birding, I love, like, the small island endemism, where it's just, like, you have this tiny little patch of habitat, and this is the only place on the planet that the bird exists. That, to me, just scratches a certain itch that, yes, when I submit the checklist to eBird, my lifer number only goes up by one, but it feels like it went up by 100. Like, that's just for me personally. And not everybody feels that way, and, like, it's to each their own. But for me, I love, like, the small island stuff like that.
Yeah, that's for super
interesting.
Yeah. That's,
to dive into.
Yeah, and then, so you went to St. Lucia after that, and you got...
I went north, so it's weird. If you were to, like, map out what I did, like, a swirl, like a swirly thing, because that's how the logistics worked out as far as the timing of the ferries, the timing of the flights, and the prices of all that. I went up to Dominica, which Dominica was probably one of my favorite islands. I can't pick a favorite, but it is way up there because... A, they have a wren. Martinique didn't have a wren, so they have the Dominican wren, or house wren, parentheses, Dominica. In addition to that, though, they have two parrots. Somehow they ended up with two.
I've heard this story. Let's dive into the parrot story. So there's, what is it, red-necked.
Yeah, and, red-necked and imperial.
So. Yeah,
so red-necked parrot is very similar. Like, to me, when I look at them, they look like they came from, like, the same... lineage as, like, the St. Lucia parrot, St. Vincent parrot. Like, it makes sense. They have that same vibe. There it is again. Imperial parrot seems like it came from a completely different lineage. I would love to know, like, the taxonomy of that, the phylogeny of that, like, how that happened on Dominica specifically. It may be similar to the thing is, like, where they, that lineage existed on all the islands and then just got whittled down. Mm-hmm. Because on Dominica, the estimated population is now, like, 50 imperial parrots. Wow. Just in this one little tiny spot on Dominica. And boy, did they make me work for it. I know some people go there and they get them fairly quickly, fairly easily. That was not my case. I go to this place. It's called the Syndicate Trail. And it's quite a drive up there. Like, it's this dinky little road that it's like a two-track type road. And I took my tiny little economy car up there. Dude, economy cars are... they are amazing. Like, I had a tiny little economy car in all of these islands, and these island roads can be really brutal to them sometimes, but they survived everything. I got up to this place, the Syndicate Trail. There currently, I haven't actually checked in a month or two, but there are three markers on Google Maps for Syndicate Trail, and there are two eBird hotspot markers for Syndicate Trail.
Why?
I don't know. The hotspot manager down there is falling down on the job. I submitted for Google. I submitted, like, which ones were the wrong ones, and hopefully they have that updated eventually. So I ended up at the wrong spot, but I didn't know I was at the wrong spot. Because there was a trail there. Like, we're in the Lesser Antilles. Like, I'm on Dominica. It's one of the least visited islands down there.
There's not going to be that many trails, right?
Yeah, and I'm just like, yeah. Like, it's not going to be marked. Of course not. Because, like, nothing is marked here. Like, you just kind of vibe it. Like, honestly, that is the island. It's just, it's an island vibe. And so I was, like, wandering down this trail, getting myself soaked with the morning dew, covered in all sorts of seeds and various things. Seen tons of redneck parrots, but no imperial parrots. And I come back out of the trail. I was like, man, didn't have imperial parrot. And I was like, I'm going to continue down the road. So I continue walking down the road. And I get like, I don't know, 2 or 3 kilometers down the road. Tons of Dominican wrens. So I was happy. Tons of Dominican wrens on the road. And then all of a sudden I walk up on this, like this small building. And it's like Syndicate Trail. I'm like, oh, oops. And so like I found the right place. But by that time it was like 10 in the morning and it was getting really hot. I went out to the overlook. It's like overlooks a valley, which is where the parrots fly by. And it was just dead. And so I spent a few hours there. Nothing really happened. So I went back. I was like, okay, now I know where the right spot is. And so I got up really early. So that it was probably like, I don't know, 4 in the morning when I got up. So that I get up there because it was like an hour drive. Because once you get off the main road, even though it's not that far, it's like 10 kilometers or something off the main road. It's just bumpy and slow. And so I got to the overlook pre-dawn and waited there for 14 hours. All the way, because they apparently had been roosting somewhere else when I was there. But that evening at dusk, a pair of imperial parrots came in.
Did you see them that evening?
I did not see them that evening. I only heard them that evening. I heard where they were. They were just on the hillside over there, but I couldn't see them. And there's no physical way to get there because there's like a giant drop-off cliff down to a river and then back up.
You didn't bring like a rope to rappel down?
No, no. I left my rope at home, unfortunately. but no, so I was like, okay, now I know where these guys are. I'm going to beat them here tomorrow morning as well. And so I got up the next morning because I was like, okay, like I was here with them as it got dark. They did not leave. So I know that they're roosting out there on that hillside. And so I got there the next morning, pre-dawn, to make sure that they couldn't leave without me being there. And as the sun started coming up, I started hearing them calling from exactly where I left them, which is a really, like that alone was just a magical experience and probably one of the top like 3 moments of the trip that just like gave me chills that like this species, which is literally on the brink of extinction, like roughly 50 of them left, 50 to 100, I think is the estimate, something like that. And like, I am waking up with them. Like, it's just for me, that's what birding is about. Those are the experiences that I really, really, really cherish. And that's something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life is that feeling of like waking up with this really, really cool species. Well, they woke up, they were calling for 10, 15 minutes in that tree and eventually flew off. And I got like absolutely garbage photos of them flying away.
But like, what are you talking about? They're like, so without a camera, I've come with this new art form of 2 to 3 pixel pictures of birds. I think that's your enter into that. I've seen these pictures. I think it's good.
Yes, it is still the definition of a 1-star photo, though.
No, I know.
As of very recently, though, Luke has got himself a new camera, at least a new lens.
Yeah.
So maybe those 1 to 3 pixel pictures will be less frequent, and ironically, my camera is not doing too hot right now, so I'm the one sending him the 1 to 3 pixel pictures.
Yeah,
digiscopes.
Anyways, back to the the Lesser Antilles. So you got pictures. You got to see them. Did you get a good view of them out like as they
decently
were flying?
As they were flying away? Then it's the type of thing where binoculars. I was like, oh, those are the imperial parrots flying away, and then like pull up the camera and snap of the bird's butt. Like it was still a ways away. Yeah. So it was like, and it was still dark. So I don't know what my ISO was.
Yeah.
It was probably like 3,200 or something.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have the new fancy mirrorless cameras. So 3,200 on my camera sucks.
Yeah. Do you have a mirrorless?
No, but 3,200 is too high for mine as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, that's an amazing experience.
Yeah. Definitely and top then, 3 moment of the trip for me.
And then you got, on that island, you got the wren too. What was that wren like comparatively?
So it vibes, and that seems to be the word. I like that word a lot. It's a very functional word here. It had the vibes were much more like the mainland house wrens than any of the others, but still very different because they have like a very, very warm cinnamon color, including on their belly. The song was very wren-like, but it was definitely completely different than house wren. Like if you were to hear that bird in Tennessee, you'd be like, what? You'd be like, that's a wren, but what is it?
Yeah.
So it's not at all like the house wren in the song.
Okay, this does not look like a house wren.
No, but compared to St. Lucia ran.
Yeah.
It is much more similar. Because the bill isn't ridiculously long. It doesn't have a giant thrasher bill.
It has a longer bill than our
house. It does. Right. But it's still proportionately smaller compared to St. Lucia ran.
Yeah.
St. Lucia ran just blows everything out of the water. but yeah, and also it doesn't have the striking white belly of like the St. Lucia and St. Vincent ran.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, it's
like Rufus.
Yeah, it's extremely Rufusy brown all over. It's a beautiful, beautiful bird. I loved
it. That's cool.
They were very, very feisty, like any wren would be, which is why they're the best.
Yeah, is that why you like them?
Oh, that's one of the top features of any bird is being feisty.
And so every single wren is feisty. Oh, Have you come across a wren that isn't feisty?
Nope, not yet. I honestly don't think it exists.
Well, you know, I might steal your favorite bird.
Yeah, I'm 60% in with the wren family. And all of them have been feisty.
We've talked about there's a couple on some islands off Mexico, right?
Yeah, that'll be when I am old and rich and I can drop 10K on
going out. Okay, but like, I got a friend who's going to be a boat captain this summer.
That's right.
So like, she's not taking a gap year anymore because full ride to college or something like that. You know, who needs that, right? anyways, but like. We're going to hire Claire, is what I'm saying, and we're going to go get those wrens.
Yeah, Clarion and Socorro.
Okay, Clarion
and Socorro. One of them was almost named after her.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. It's probably like Clarion, though, but yeah. Yeah, they're not very far from each other, but they're way
out there. Oh, that's a house wren vibe.
Yeah, they have...
That one looks more like a house wren.
Yeah, they're very dusty gray.
Than any of the ones you were talking about.
Yeah, but they got split because somebody did the research, apparently. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, look at this, Patrick. I mean, that's... Yeah, you would be like that house wren vibe.
Yeah, for sure. It's slightly longer build, but the coloration and general appearance of it is much more similar.
Yeah, like I would be like, that's a little off, but not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, you would probably feel, I don't know how much time you spend out west, but you would probably feel that some of the western house wrens are a little bit off compared to the eastern house wrens, and then even more so when you get down to like the brown-throated house wrens of southeastern Arizona and Mexico. Yeah,
for sure.
But yeah. Back to birding. Back to the Lesser Antilles.
Yeah.
Dominican house wrens were abundant. It was probably the easiest of the four house wrens down there. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say house wren. That makes me sick. Of the four Antillean wrens that are down there, Dominica wren is by far the easiest because pretty much any suitable patch of scrubby whatever bush, they're going to be there. Whereas others were a little bit more
sick.
It does, which is why in my trip report, like, I don't know if you noticed, but on most of the species, I'd put like, for like the Lesser Antillean tanager, for example, I'd put like Lesser Antillean tanager in like brackets, Grenada or brackets, St. Vincent.
Yeah. And you would
I did the opposite for the house wrens. I put Dominica wren and then like in brackets, like house wren, just because like that's just,
yeah. In the description, we'll do a comparison of the Northern house wren to every single one of these species.
Yeah.
We'll link some photos or something.
Yeah.
Was there a warbler or anything on that island?
Dominica, no. Yeah. Dominica, the other thing to target on Dominica is, well, there's a few things. So now, actually, since I had written the report, actually, I think I got it. I was able to update it just before I published it. The 2023 AOU or AOS now, I guess, report came out and split Lesser Antillean euphonia. Because when I had written my first first draft of the report, I had Antillean euphonia brackets Lesser Antilles, but literally right, it was like a day or two before I published it on CloudBirders, the AOS report came out and split the Puerto Rican, Hispaniolan, and Lesser Antillean euphonia.
And so that Lesser Antillean is on pretty much every island?
Yes, but it's much, much, much easier on Dominica compared to all the others, in my experience.
Really?
At the Syndicate Trail, which is where you go for the parrots, Lesser Antillean euphonia were fairly easy there. I did have them on other... I had a brief look on Martinique as well.
Mm-hmm.
But Dominica was by far the easiest. So in my trip report, I said, like, definitely try to find them on that island. Because I think they're also on St. Lucia as well.
Does the Lesser Antillean euphonia look like every other euphonia species?
Vibe-wise, yeah. 100%. Yeah.
It's still a beautiful bird.
Yeah. I would give it... Lesser Antillean euphonia... Yeah, now that it's Lesser Antillean euphonia, not just Antillean. So, like, Puerto Rican and Hispaniolan, I would give like they're very similar to elegant euphonia, if you're familiar with that, elegant or golden rump euphonia.
Yeah, I mean, this Lesser Antillean doesn't look exactly like
anything. Lesser Antillean is quite different from the others because the males are more greenish.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize that they were mostly, they almost have like a, to me, the male, adult male Lesser Antillean euphonia has a look that is almost like it's a juvenile male molting into male plumage because it still has a lot of that green female left over.
Yeah.
And do you want to explain those colors a little bit and where they are on the bird?
Yeah. So euphonias, well, especially like this line of euphonias typically have some form of yellow on their throat and belly. The males typically have like a dark navy blue, sometimes purplish hues or purplish blue, just very dark color on their back and various colors on the head, forehead. Like this line of euphonias typically has like some form of light baby blue hood.
Yeah.
And Lesser Antillean euphonias, the males, for the female euphonias, pretty much this applies to almost all female euphonias. There's some shade of like dull olive green. They look like the forest essentially, like they're very camouflaged because they're.
Did you see like get pictures of a female? Because Eber doesn't even split them out.
No, I personally didn't, but there are photos of them on there where it's just like a all green bird with like a baby blue forehead.
Okay, yeah. And did you see those birds?
I did. I didn't get good photos of the females. Most of the photos I got of, I didn't know at the time. I thought it was a juvenile male. But apparently, unless there just aren't photos of adult, like actual photos of adult Lesser Antillean euphonias, that is an adult male. But I could be wrong. Because it lacks like...
On eBird, it says it's an adult. So.
Right. I think somebody else labeled... Because I think my photo is the cover photo for the species. And somebody else labeled it as adult male. And I'm not, I guess I'll take their word for it. I haven't actually looked at the papers to know the split. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, yep. Your photo is labeled. Yeah, and it's not even an adult male. It's just adult.
Male? Oh, adult. Okay, yeah. I should look more into that because I don't know. I should look at the papers to see if the specimen, if they have specimens of adult males that have like the dark purple blue back. None of the birds that I saw had that.
Yeah.
They had that beautiful.
And that doesn't make sense. Blue. Like if you saw a decent number of them that you
I mean, but sure. Here's the thing. It was all during one time period. So with molting going on, like there could be, you know, maybe 5 or 10% adult males.
I didn't see any pictures that looked.
Yeah, neither did I when I looked through eBird, which led me to believe that those are the males.
These are beautiful birds.
Euphonias are fantastic.
And these are technically finches too. Do they act like finches at all?
Yes, that may be just an audio thing, though, because the way I hear birds can oftentimes affect the way I perceive them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And euphonias give me strong, like, siskin vibes with their calls.
Oh, really?
Their call notes are very similar to, like, a siskin-type call to me. At least that's what it makes me think of. And so that probably affects the way that I see them. But I do, it makes sense that they're finches.
Luke, do you know the potential number of euphonia species that you will be running into?
It's like 5 to 10 or something like that. Yeah. And they're all super similar. And you got to look at like undertail patterns, undertail coverts, caps, throat, the bill size and shape. Yeah, there's a lot of like messy euphonia idea.
Females can be really difficult sometimes. Usually males seem scary at first, but like once you actually get down there and start seeing them, it becomes...
It's like vibes. And I'm sure there's like habitat behavior differences for sure, touch on. And because we still have so much to cover on this, we are going to go ahead and record another episode that will be out the next week. So this was Back to Birding, and this is with Luke Thompson
and Patrick Higgins.
And today we were with
David Hawley.
So, we'll see y'all next time.
Yep.